So we are going to ask people, if you're standing by the door, if you could please find a chair, because as the door stays open, it's hard for us to hear. So with that, I'm going to start the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, February 11th. And just to let folks know, we're not going to go exactly in the order of what is on the agenda, but we're going to try to work through everything so we can be out of here by hopefully 3:30, because that's when we're getting kicked out of the room. Okay, first we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1009. Senator Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Over the last 2 weeks, this legislation has launched what I think is a much-needed discussion about the scourge of plastic bags and the damage they're doing to Oregon recyclers. And this dialogue is far more than I would have hoped for, and four important facts, at least to me, have come into focus. First, plastic bags are an ever-increasing component of litter in Oregon. Today's problem, I think, rivals the one that existed just prior to passage of the bottle bill in 1971. No. The Tom McCall-founded group Solve says 12% of the garbage they pick up on those beach cleanups comes from plastic bags. Number two, Oregon recyclers have been slammed, absolutely slammed, with exploding costs associated with plastic bags. The Association of Oregon Recyclers says 35% of operating expenses at material recovery facilities are directly due to plastic bags jamming up their sorting machines. Three, the plastics industry has chosen a strategy of demonizing paper bags as a way to divert attention from the environmental damage plastic bags have on wildlife, beaches, and oceans. Make no mistake, plastic bags are far worse on Oregon's environment than paper bags. And four, the state has no plan to deal with this environmental problem. There's no litter plan. Oregon is losing the war against litter because we're not fighting a war against litter. So it was our hope that we could come up with a statewide solution before local governments move forward on their own. We've already gone through many drafts in an effort to reach consensus here, but it's clear the clock is running out. So without consensus, we cannot move this bill forward. I want to thank you, the committee, and we're still committed to moving forward. The common ground here is that supporters of this legislation, as well as opponents, agree that plastic bags are a huge environmental problem. Let's use this common ground as a foundation. We have time, Madam Chair. These bags will be around for 1,000 years.
Thank you, Senator Haas, and I want to thank you for your leadership and hard work on this issue, and I look forward to working with you on this in the next session, because I agree, I don't think this issue is going to go away. So with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1009. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 986, and I want to invite up Senator Rick Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26, and thanks for hearing today Senate Bill 986. Just a little background first, and I know you'll hear from some other folks, and there's an amendment to it I will address just briefly about this. In 2003, the Oregon Legislature passed Senate Bill 751, which created the Willamette River Cleanup Authority. The authority is comprised of the governor, who chairs, two House members, and two senators. Senator Atkinson and I are the two members on the Senate. The purpose of the authority is to have a legislative body who can receive reports from the Department of Environmental Quality, the EPA, and other parties relating to cleaning up the Willamette River. The authority may make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly regarding the issuance of bonds in the Superfund listing. That is perhaps the most important part of the original legislation. As you can see before you, this legislation does not deal with any of the substance, but the big substantive issue that was passed by the legislature in 2003 and signed by the governor was allow pollution control bonds to be used for the Willamette River cleanup. That was the substantive that is now in law. While efforts to clean up the river have continued through various local, private, state, and federal agencies, EPA, DEQ, Willamette Riverkeeper, etc., a recent study conducted by Oregon State University concluded that there are still high levels of pollution in the Willamette River, that the cleanup itself is complex, and that cleanup, containment, and monitoring efforts in this section, the Superfund 5 of the Willamette River, will need to, quote, continue for some time. part of the debate on this in 2003, and I remember quoting from and then Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton when she talked about the Hudson River, that don't look at timelines. It took 29 years for the Hudson unless you take an active role, as they did in New York State. This will continue to be duplicated. At that point, we were expecting a record of decision in 2006. Those who testified on this bill, some of them said that would never happen. It's going to be a lot longer, and we are here now in 2010, and we do not still have a record of decision. And the lengthy process of cleaning this river up, as well as the thousands of jobs that are not being created because this land is not available, continues to be the same. There has been little effort made by the authority to participate in the discussion and efforts to clean up the river. There is still much work to be done to clean up this vital resource. And while cleaning up the river is important and critical to our state, perhaps even more essential, colleagues, is getting Oregonians back to work. With the passage and implementation of this bill, the 2001 legislature in less than a year should, let's hope this time, receive recommendations on opportunities for the creation and retention of regional jobs. Those jobs are what Oregon needs. This is one way to help make sure the voice of both the executive and the legislative branch are there. Specifically, what the base bill does, I know it sounds pretty basic, but it specifies organizational steps, that the vice chair will be selected by the majority of the members. The vice chair may assume the chair's duties, and the authority should meet at least twice a year. So on the base bill, comment first. I know it says, well, why do you need to put that in? Well, I'll be totally candid in talking with the head of our legislative council. It is not necessary to pass this bill for that to happen, because the power of the authority is vested in the authority, not the chair. I just think that it would be better for prescriptive purposes and orderly purposes to make it clear that a majority of the members, as stated in the original legislation, can conduct business as a quorum. But I just think for procedural cases, it's probably better to make that clear rather than, say, ad hoc. And that's why the bill is before you. And I'm hopeful that the members of the authority will meet before the end of this year, regardless of whether this legislation moves forward. Now, there's a Dash 1 amendment that is not my amendment. Others will speak to that. But I would just echo that my support for what is included in that Dash 1 and what the Dash 1 amendment is, I think, attempts to do is give more specificity as to what the authority should do. This is an issue I know we're all concerned about. We're all concerned about the length of time. What was testified in 2003 appears to be taking place. Not only does the original record of decision taking much longer than was told originally, but the lengthy purposes that we have seen in complex issues like this, where you have 80 or 90 potential responsible parties, the testimony back then, as it would be today, says that once that ROD is issued, that's when the real delay becomes, because everyone will retreat to their responsible parties, to their legal boardrooms, and where delay is going to be the order of the day and may go another decade before you move to the next step. So I think that when we're talking about jobs in this legislature and we're talking about asserting how important this is, not only for the environment, but for when the cleanup procedure takes place, that we have a voice with our Department of Environmental Quality and working with EPA, ensuring that these are Oregon jobs. As a silent voice and just watching a process, I will tell you, Madam Chair, what's more likely is that this will be the biggest probably public works project heretofore in the state of Oregon. You know, we've had that with OTIA, and we had it with the Jobs and Transportation Act, but this will be billions at this point by the time this ever gets around to actually being done. And without that voice and having a strong authority to make recommendations to the legislature, instead of creating lots of jobs for Oregonians, maintaining kind of a silent voice, I think you're probably more likely to see Fluor Corporation, Westinghouse, or Bechtel, or Raytheon coming in and getting billions of dollars rather than putting Oregonians back to work. So, Madam Chair, that is my testimony, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Okay.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to invite up Mike Carrier from the Governor's Office, and we also have John Kroger, our Attorney General, who would like to speak on this bill. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming today. Somebody take a picture
Chair,
of the executive branch of the Attorney General's office.
Please go ahead.
I'll start. Thank you. For the record, my name is Mike Carrier. I'm Governor Kulongoski's Natural Resources Policy Director. Madam Chair, I'm here to offer testimony. I provided you with a letter, so I won't read it verbatim, but I just want to express to you that the issue of the cleanup of the Portland Harbor as well as the Willamette Cleanup Authority are issues of great importance to Governor Kulongoski. However, our office does not favor Senate Bill 986, nor do we favor the Dash 1 amendments. Senator Metzger did a great job of summarizing what's in the original bill. The Dash 1 amendments expand some of the functions and issues that the authority would look at. The governor believes that the Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Department of Justice, and the U.S. EPA, other government agencies, and the potentially responsible parties are doing an adequate job, making adequate progress, and completing the remedial investigation and feasibility study that will lead to the record of decision. In addition, we think the state is making significant progress in working with landowners cleaning up upland properties adjacent to the harbor. We believe that expanding the role of the authority in, as provided in 986-1 would cause an unnecessary expenditure of state resources at a time when we're looking to save those resources. This would include preparation of briefing documents for the additional meetings, staffing the meetings, preparing reports and recommendations, and just a number of other tasks that would be associated with this. And we think that the resources of the agencies that would be involved in this are better spent continuing the work in cooperation with EPA and others that they've already begun. And finally, I want to say that in signing the original bill, it wasn't the governor's intent that the authority would substitute itself for the executive branch agencies or become an extra legislative body. That's my word of the day, and that may be somewhat provocative to you. But we do have a process through the interim committees, the work that you do during session, the reports that we make available to you, and there are opportunities to hear updates and reports from the agencies on the progress to address these issues and identify needed legislation, including the issuance of bonds going forward. So with that, Madam Chair, I conclude my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or the committee may have.
Okay. Why don't we hear from our Attorney General, and then we'll take questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Kroger, the Attorney General of Oregon. You'll forgive me if I did not submit anything in writing, but I learned about this bill about 2 hours ago, and I'm here to testify both against the bill and the Dash 1 amendments. The role in which I'm before you is as the legal advisor to state government, and I can tell you that we are intimately involved in shepherding the Superfund cleanup process forward in the port. I will tell you that it's extraordinarily important for the state to clean up the Portland Harbor as quickly as possible, both as a public health issue, an environmental issue, and a economic development issue. However, I'm concerned that this bill will actually undermine the process that we have underway. I think it potentially will slow down the process. It will undercut the state of Oregon's negotiating position in the litigation, which will be starting just a few months from now, and which, quite honestly, we are in the process of allocating funds to make sure that the state can adequately present the state's position. And I'm deeply concerned that if we create a what amounts to a separate allocation process and a lengthy discussion of private bonding or public bonding of privately caused pollution, we will potentially unravel the process that is underway and potentially wind up increasing taxpayer liability by undercutting the negotiating position of the state in that process. And for those reasons, I would oppose the legislation.
Okay, thank you. Questions for either the Governor's Office, Attorney General, Senator Boquist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess maybe the Governor's Office is the best person to ask, and believe it or not, Mike, this is a favorable question, so rather odd for me. Is there any reason, I mean, obviously you create bureaucracy, that creates money, but is there any reason to believe that one process or the other, I mean, when we go to clean up, we're going to create jobs. If we're going to create jobs in the process that's working now and going through, is there any more jobs going to be created by doing it differently and adding another layer of government?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, no, I do not believe that. I think the result can be the same at the end. And I think many of the issues that are raised in the Dash 1 amendments about the issue of can we accelerate brownfield cleanup? Can we do look at whether there are economic development opportunities, especially job opportunities associated with any of these activities surrounding both the process and the resolution of this problem going forward, has the same potential and can occur within the existing process. And we're absolutely happy to encourage the agencies that are working on this to look at those issues in concert with groups like the Port of Portland and the Portland Development Commission rather than do it through this bill and a new process.
Any other questions? Senator Atkinson.
Mr. Carrier, clarification one more time. You're opposed to the dash ones?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, yes.
Okay. So you guys, as in globally speaking, the Democrats are not all on the same page on this bill?
Madam Chair,
I've got no, yes, no, and yes, maybe, yes.
It's a big tent.
I mean, where are we?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, I think you've drawn your own conclusion. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Mike. I actually do have a question for either of you. Could you talk a little bit about the process as far as the decision-making with the U.S. EPA and whether or not this process could help expedite the record of decision or some of the federal processes that are involved in cleaning up Portland Harbor and the Willamette River?
Madam Chair, I'll take the first attempt at answering that question, and it's an excellent question, and thank you for asking it, because I do not believe that increasing the activity of the authority, expanding the range of issues that they discuss, creates any greater potential to accelerate the work of EPA and the parties in reaching a record of decision, which is now slated for 2012.
Okay. Would you care to answer?
Chair Dingfelder, I believe the best way to get the harbor cleaned up as quickly as possible is to pursue the course that the state is doing now, which is to participate in a process to determine the overall cost and how it's going to be allocated. And I don't think there's anything here that could possibly accelerate the cleanup. I think there is a significant possibility that it will delay the cleanup by weakening the state's negotiating position in those discussions with all of the other parties that are potentially liable.
Okay. One more question.
Thank you, gentlemen. We have one more question from
Vice
Chair.
Attorney General, thank you very much. I'm intrigued by your discussion about the current process. Can you elaborate a little bit more on your comments you made about general obligation bonds as it relates to losing negotiating power on behalf of the state?
Sure. The process that we are engaged in will determine an overall cleanup cost and then allocate cost among potentially liable parties. And the state of Oregon is a potentially liable party because of two of our agencies, the Department of Transportation and the Department of State Lands. The Department of Transportation, because of runoff from roads and bridges in the Superfund site, the Department of State Lands because it owns 79 parcels of property within the Superfund site. As we engage in this process, which amounts effectively to a private arbitration, one of the goals of other parties will be to transfer as much of the liability as possible from themselves onto the state. And to the extent that we indicate that we are prepared to bond private liability, we not only tell everyone that we have deep pockets, but that those pockets are filled. And I'm afraid that if we create a second discussion about liability, bonding of liability of private entities in the Superfund site, that will be used effectively another secondary process or discussion about how we're going to clean up the harbor. It may detract from our primary negotiations. It may be discussions that occur before the authority may be used against us when we're trying to achieve our primary goal, which is a swift cleanup without sticking Oregon taxpayers with more than their fair share. And I'm very reluctant to have effectively a discussion about the right way to clean up the harbor occurring in two separate fora. I would prefer that we pursue our single track, which I believe has a very high likelihood of a successful outcome for Oregon. I would say that generally, years ago, there might have been a real role for this. Honestly, I think the idea of trying to do something to jumpstart the process might have been very effective years ago. The reality is, I think all of us believe that the process, which has been horribly delayed, is now on a good path. And we believe we can see the tunnel, if not the light at the end of the tunnel. And I would hate to do anything which would interfere with or potentially delay that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming here today. Okay, we have a few other folks that would like to speak on this. Jim McKenna and Dave Ashton from the Port of Portland. And okay. Since you're all from the port, I'm going to ask if you can be brief, because you can see we have a room full of folks behind you that have a lot to say on many other bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be real brief. I'm going to introduce these guys. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Annette Price, State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland. Today, I would like to introduce Jim McKenna, who is our Superfund Project Manager, and David Ashton, who is Assistant General Counsel of the Port of Portland. And I'll turn it over to Jim to present our testimony. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Annette said, my name is Jim McKenna. I'm the Superfund Program Manager for the Port of Portland. I'm also a member of the management team for the Lower Willamette Group, which is the group of parties that signed the administrative order with EPA and DEQ to do the harbor-wide study of the Superfund site. Today, I'm here speaking on behalf of the port to present these -1 amendments to the bill. We have our written testimony. There's a lot of detail in that written testimony. I think I could be brief and sum it up kind of into two major categories. We think the -1 amendments can be productive in addressing two major issues. One is, this is a very complex Superfund site, and we support the original goals of having a cleanup that will achieve not only protection of human health and the environment, improve the water quality, and improve habitat, but also improve the prospects of maintaining a vibrant working harbor. And those are the original stated goals in the legislation. In order to achieve those multiple goals, we need to have a lot of conversation and talk about how that's going to come about. We think the agencies are doing a great job trying to get that record of decision by 2010 or 2012. That's EPA and DEQ working cooperatively with many of the natural resource trustees. We support that effort. The site was listed in 2000. At that time, the idea was that this RIFS, the study, would take about 5 years and be on the order of $10 to $12 million. We're now over 10 years into it and well over $75 million on that. So in terms of maintaining a vibrant working harbor, the Port of Portland has experienced, and many other parties in the harbor have experienced, significant hurdles and obstacles to achieving and maintaining a vibrant working harbor. A couple quick examples. At Terminal 4, we had a tenant who wanted to expand their operation, bring in an environmental friendly biofuel operation. After long discussions with them to try and work that out, the cloud of the Superfund listing and the potential liability issues that may pose to that party, they just decided not to bring that biofuel operation to Portland. We lost the jobs, we lost the business, and it went north up into Washington. There's also a party in Swan Island Lagoon, that's a lagoon right off of the Swan Island facility near the Portland shipyard, who wanted to expand a dock operation, again with the Superfund listing still hanging and many of the issues unresolved about cleanup goals and objectives and potential liabilities. That party pulled back and did not expand their operation. So we are experiencing real-time, real issues that are affecting economic growth in the harbor. David works with the Portland Development Commission on the Harbor Ready issues, trying to get brownfields redeveloped. We've had numerous struggles on that front as well. And then briefly, the second major category is the orphan share issue. The Port of Portland fully supports the polluter pays principle. Those who have caused contamination should pay their fair share to clean up their contamination. We fully support that. We would not support anything that diverted that responsibility onto the taxpayers of Oregon. However, in a complex Superfund site like this, a harbor that's been around for over 100 years, hundreds of potential responsible parties have come and gone. They are no longer around. We have one example of an area called Willamette Cove, where the Port of Portland had a dry dock operation from around 1905 to about 1953. We left the site in 1953. We haven't been there for almost 60 years. Since that time, there have been dozens and dozens of parties who have operated different types of operations, small mom-and-pop operations to lumber mill operations in that area. They're all gone. Right now, we're looking at over 90 orphan parties associated just with the Willamette Cove area. If alternative funding isn't identified to address that orphan share, the cost for the cleanup from all those parties can be thrown back onto public entities such as the port and other public entities to cover that orphan share. And we don't feel that's in the port's interest. It could be economically crippling to us. But that's just one example. Willamette Cove is a small cove in a 10-mile Superfund site. We anticipate that there will be other areas where there will be a significant orphan share issue. So those are the two major issues we saw where this these Dash 1 amendments could help spur the communication and help identify unique opportunities to deal with those difficult issues. Thank you.
Do you want to add anything?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm just here to answer any questions relating to lost transactional opportunities or in relation to the orphan share issues at Willamette Cove. Thank you.
Are there any questions for the Port of Portland or the panel? Okay, thank you very much for coming here today and testifying. In our last panel, or folks, this is not signifying that you're all coming up to testify together, but I will ask you to come up. Paul Sliman from the Portland Development Commission, Gary Bauer, Northwest Natural, and Travis Williams from Willamette River Keepers. Okay, Paul, why don't you get started?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Sliman of the Portland Development Commission, representing both the commission and the city of Portland. You have my testimony, some of which has already been covered, so I'll skip ahead to the points that I'd like to make. The harbor provides more than 19,000 jobs to the region, 66% of which reside in Oregon. In addition to the jobs and revenues it generates, it serves as Oregon's uniquely situated multimodal freight transportation hub. With Marine Airport Freeway and two Class 1 rail lines, it's home to pivotal traded sector industries serving global export markets, industries from all over our state. Grass seed and hazelnuts from the Willamette Valley, apples and pears from Hood River, lumber from central eastern Oregon reach international customers through this harbor. It's not only an important part of the state's overall economy, it can be key to our economic growth.
Paul, I just want to mention, we have your written testimony, so instead of reading it,
trying to skip ahead.
Yeah, if you can just summarize for us. Thank you.
I won't talk about the underlying bill. I will talk about some of the interests of the Dash 1 amendments. Mm-hmm. We should do more than endeavor to clean up this Superfund site. This is a big investment for the state of Oregon. This substantial effort and the enormous resources can lead to greater opportunity. Opportunity in terms of local and regional jobs, opportunity in terms of innovation, new technologies, green cleanup, all that will help cement Oregon's reputation as a clean, green, and growing state. I also would like to be clear, neither the city nor PDC supports funding that would disturb the polluter pays principle or relieve parties of their cleanup obligations. Changes to the law should not inappropriately commit any public funds toward portions of the cleanup that should rightfully be shouldered by those responsible. But looking into the options and opportunities available for cleanup, jobs, and revitalization noted in the proposed amendments are important and good for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. We are a member of the Lower Willamette Group. We are, just kind of give you a quick background, we're 151 years old this month. We purchased property, our predecessor companies did, in the Linton area that is now part of the Superfund site back in the early or late 1800s. We had a manufactured gas facility at that site beginning in the early 1900s, closed it down in the mid-1950s. And that process basically took coke, which was brought in on ships as ballast, took that coke off, manufactured gas from it. As a result of that, of course, there were waste byproducts, and at the time, the general practice was to just dispose of those at the site, and that's what happened. As a result, we now have a Superfund cleanup process that we're involved in. We have been working with EPA and DEQ for well over 10 years on this. I think, as others have said, it's been a long process. It's one that we would hope would move as fast as it could. Our interest in this is basically, again, at forums that allow us to bring people up to speed, to bring people to the table, and to try to move this forward as fast as we can. The kind of the joke amongst some of us has been that when people say, well, when do you expect the record of decision, we say in about 3 years, and that's what we've said every year since the early 2000s. And so, again, our goal out of all this is to just try to find a way to move forward. We'd like to start a cleanup process as soon as we can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, my name is Travis Williams, and I'm executive director and riverkeeper for Willamette Riverkeeper. And I feel a little bit mixed about this bill because I think there are some folks who do want to see the harbor, certainly you've heard the testimony today, get cleaned up in a timely manner, and I certainly appreciate their interest in doing that. However, I think this bill with the Dash 1 amendments don't represent the way to do that. We often talk about how long this process has taken from when the harbor was listed 9 years ago, and really we've been in a process of having the EPA and DEQ work with all the responsible parties to, in essence, study this issue and have a comprehensive understanding of all the contaminants in this 5 to 6 to 7 mile area, depending on how you look at it, and how they move, how they behave, how they interact, and what they mean to the ecological health of the river in this area. And that's taken a long time, in part because the US EPA has had to go back and request additional data and additional study from a lot of these parties. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. The biggest issue I have about discussing bonding and numbers and bonding authority is that I think there's a potential for some folks to say, well, there's this opportunity for public funding of the orphan share that could be, that will be allocated in some volume. It makes a lot of sense for my particular interest in that case to try to make it so there is a bigger orphan share ultimately defined. Now, what's interesting in all this, too, of course, is that the EPA is the final arbiter of that, and they will make a decision about what the orphan share is. So, again, my sense is that this bill kind of it provides confusion. It's yet another forum that has to be addressed by the entities that are out there trying to do good work, like DEQ. If we're really interested in a comprehensive cleanup, let's double the size of the DEQ Portland Harbor team so they can really continue to expand their work in those upland areas. And I think that if we were to have a Dash 2 amendment, it ought to include plastic bags. So, I'll leave it at that for now. But again, I appreciate the
intent. I was going to say, unfortunately, Senator Hass wasn't here to, well, make sure he listens to that. Yeah.
But I appreciate the intent here. I just don't think this is the right vehicle right now. It could be something that, as the cleanup process moves forward and we're really getting into talking dollars and responsibility, that could make more sense later.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the panel or to these gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 986? So we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 986. And colleagues, from what I've heard, the testimony here, I do appreciate the intent of the bill. I think I tend to agree with the our last witness. But when this bill first passed in 2003, I think we've made a long way in progress towards the cleanup. As you've heard, the record of decision is a US EPA deadline that we certainly would like to encourage, and I'm hoping the US EPA, you know, out there, the federal government is listening, encourage them to move swiftly. And that's part of our challenge, is that we don't have control over the rate of response of the federal agencies, and that's been a big challenge here. So certainly, I absolutely support those efforts. I am concerned about the testimony we heard, especially from the Attorney General, about possibly opening up liability for the state. When we're in such tight financial times, I think taking on that liability is unwise at this time. But I certainly appreciate the proponents of the bill and the challenges that you work within. So certainly, I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this in upcoming sessions and appreciate the work that you've done. With that,
Madam Chair,
yes,
may I make a comment on
certainly.
This bill? Thank you. I have a thank you very much for the chair's comments. My comments are a little bit different in the fact that it's true Senator Metzger and I were on the inaugural senatorial members of the Willamette River Cleanup Authority. And before we were placed on that, the session before that, I had run a bill that had to do with bonding authority for cleanup, which we thought was a market-driven solution to actually get it done. And many of the people in the room today oppose that bill. I think the timeline on extending the bonding authority was then, not now, and I don't believe that the river is getting cleaned up. And the fact that we're cleaning up this filthy river in the Willamette River at the speed of the federal government should be a crime to all of us, frankly.
I appreciate your comments, Senator, and I think the timing is a big issue here for what we've heard today. So with that, we are going to move on to our next bill. Senator Bates, I know, is here to talk about Senate Bill 1060, and we're just about to get him, so I will go ahead and open up a public a work session on Senate Bill 1060, and Beth will be right back to talk about the amendments. Okay. Beth, I just opened up the work session on Senate Bill 1060. If you could walk us through the amendments and which dash we're on.
Madam Chair, we are on Dash 7, which you should have in the packet in front of you. The Dash 7 amendment would create a task force on waterways composed of 17 members, direct the State Land Board to designate one of its members to serve on the task force as chair, and to study the use by the public of waterways. It directs that the task force report to legislative committees on or before December 1st, 2010.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bates, and if you want to say a few words on the Dash 7.
Yeah, just a few words very quickly, I could. For the record, Alan Bates, the state senator from District 3. As you know from our earlier testimony, this is an issue we think is important enough to bring some clarity to, and after having a couple more meetings here in the Capitol, one of which was very informative, attended probably by close to 50 people, I think we realized this is a complex issue, a greater complexity than we realized, and we need more time on this. So this is not the time and place to be having a measure of this importance go through in a special session. Having said that, we also have come to the conclusion that a task force on waterways is an appropriate way of dealing with this. I know the Vice Chair, Senator Atkin, always has a cringe when he hears task force. If you would think of it as a working group or a work group, I'd appreciate that, Senator, but I know it's something you cringe at every time you hear it. This task force is going to be set in time. It will be dissolved January 1st of the next session, so it has a job to do and bring things back. It will be a 17-member task force. The Senate President will appoint two members from the Senate, one member from the general public, a member representing the ports, two members representing interests of conservation groups and recreational waterway users, and two members representing the interests of business and timber property. The Speaker of the House will also appoint eight members, two House members, one member from general public, one member representing interests of local government, two members representing conservative groups and recreational users, and two members representing business, ag, timber, and property owners. One member of the land board will be chairing this. I would tell you those selections were carefully made to represent both the pros and cons of this. This is not something we're setting up to have failure. The only way we'll have a chance of getting something together that really makes sense is to have everyone at the table who's both in favor and opposed to some of the issues we have to deal with and try to hammer something out that really makes sense. Our last meeting, I would say, we got to about 75% of the issues in a positive way. We've probably got about 25% yet to go, and we're going to have to deal with each one of those one by one through the task force. The task force is going to look at the use of waterways, and relevant consideration will include, will not be limited to, the public use doctrine we've talked a lot about, judicial opinions from the Supreme Court, and the interests of landowners who own property on the adjacent waterways. The task force will submit a report summarizing results and include recommendations for legislation, including proposed language to the Interim Legislative Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, which I believe is you, and we'll bring legislation forward, if possible, in the next session. It's going to be tasked by DSL. The Department of State Lands has in its budget adequate funds to support this program. There will be a fiscal on it, but it's going to be low enough that we don't have to send it to Ways and Means. It'll probably be in the neighborhood of $20,000. So we believe this is a good step in the right direction. We've had some progress made in the last 8 or 9 months on and above what happened in the last 20 years, and we have a chance to close this down potentially in the next legislative assembly. We want to take a good shot at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Let me see if there's any questions from any of the panel members. Okay.
Statement.
And Senator Atkinson, I'm sure you want to respond to the task force issue.
Just for the record, I love Senator Bates. I just have a philosophical problem with task forces, not this task force in particular, but I will not kick and scream that bad when you drag me into this on navigability. But I just, for consistency's sake, I just have a problem with task forces in general, and I'll save those comments for the floor.
May I reply?
Absolutely.
Senator Atkinson, it's only going to get worse for you. Let me tell you the rest of the thing on this. It's going to be called a task force. There will be no per diem for members, and you are likely going to be asked to join that task force. But I'll give you a ride back and forth.
I might
make it worse.
I might modify my love word to the word like.
Okay, well, do we have any marriage counselors in the...
We cut the funding.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
I appreciate all your hard work on this, and this is an issue that I certainly been aware of for many, many years, and I think you are on the right track, putting the folks in the room that hopefully can come to agreement or come to recommendations that we can hear next session. So appreciate your leadership and hard work on this.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, with that... we are in a work session, so I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I will move the -7s into Senate Bill 1060.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves for adoption of the -7s into Senate Bill 1060. Are there any objections? Senator Boquist, are you scratching your head?
I wish the work group well.
Okay. Oh, what the heck, sure.
Okay, so noted for the record. But with that, the amendments are adopted, and I will accept another motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1060 is amended by the -7s to the floor with a do pass recommendation and suggest that the carrier be the vice chair.
Bring it on.
Yes. I think maybe we'll have co-carriers on this. So Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 1060 to the floor with a do pass recommendation as amended with the -7 amendments. Is there any discussion? And discussion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I wish Senator Brown, now Secretary Brown, good luck on her work group. And I'm sure they will do well with Senator Bates. Yes,
I think we all wish them well. Okay. With that, are there any objections? So noted for the record, Senator Boquist and Senator Atkinson. And the motion carries. And
Senator Bates.
Senator Bates, would you like to co-carry it?
I just want to hear it out, right?
Okay. Yes, got it. Okay, so Senator Bates is our carrier. I'm sure we will hear from my co-chair about it on the floor, but Senator Bates, if you'd be so kind as to be the carrier, it's all yours.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, close the work session on Senate Bill 1060.
Yeah.
And next up, we are going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1032. And Beth, if you can provide us with an overview of the amendment.
Madam Chair, the amendment that is in front of you is the Dash 6 amendment. It would do a couple things different than the original bill, including the definition of child's beverage container, which is limited to an empty baby bottle or cup, including a spill-proof cup designed to be filled with liquid intended for the consumption by a child less than 3 years of age. The amendment also requires manufacturers of those beverages described made with BPA to make an effort to notify retailers of the prohibition at least 90 days before the ban takes effect, and applies to anyone operating as a manufacturer, distributor, or retailer. The act takes effect July 1st, 2011.
Okay, and committee members, I had requested this amendment. I do want to thank, I don't know if the grocers are in the room here somewhere. Yes, I wanted to thank the grocers for your work on this amendment, and thank you for your input making recommendations, and as you can see, the bill has been significantly narrowed. The cans for formula has been removed, and it has been narrowed to sippy cups and baby bottles. But the technical term is spill-proof cup, for the record. But with that, I will accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 6 in the Senate Bill 1032.
Okay, Senator Podolsky moves the adoption of the Dash 6 into Senate Bill 1032. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1032 as amended by the Dash 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 1032 as amended with the Dash 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections?
Yes.
Okay, so noted, Senator Boquist and Senator Atkinson, almost said Przanski. And with that, the motion carries, and I will carry that to the floor because I like saying sippy cup so much.
Madam Chair, we might invoke the one-hour notice rule just in case we want to give it some more purpose.
Okay, so noted. And with that, the motion carries. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1032, and we will open up a work session. Let's see, where are we going? Okay, we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1031, and that's the Destination Resort Bill. And Beth, if you can give us an overview. I think there's a new amendment. Is that correct?
There is. Madam Chair, the latest amendment is the Dash 3 amendment. The difference between this and the Dash 2 is that the applicability section that was in the Dash 2 is removed, which leaves in place the general applicability statute for land use decisions rather than something different.
Okay. So, colleagues, you had heard that there was, we did have one comment that came up about this issue, so we were able to address that. I think you heard that this was a consensus process. We heard from almost all of the work group members. At this point, unless somebody has any questions on this amendment, does anybody have any questions? We want to have the director come up, DLCD.
I'll get online with him afterwards.
Okay.
If I understand it.
Okay. All right, with that, I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3s in the Senate Bill 1031.
And we also have to move the Dash 1s as well, don't we?
No, Dash 3 is everything.
Okay, Dash 3 is everything. Senator Przanski moves the Dash for adoption of the Dash 3s into Senate Bill 1031, and just to make sure that Dash 3s contain the Dash 1, so it's now all of those changes in one amendment. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to congratulate you for an effective use of a work group rather than a task force. There's a lot of smiling people out there from very divergent views, and I'm excited to see this go.
Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Any objections? Okay, seeing none, the Dash 3s are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1031 as amended by the Dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 1031 to the floor as amended with the Dash 3s with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Okay, seeing none, the motion carries, and Senate Bill 1031 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I will carry the bill, given that I sat through many, many hours on this and I have to share the pain with everybody. And I also, before I close the work session, just do want to thank, I know there's many members of the task force, a work group, sorry, in here. And I want to thank all of you for being productive members, and we'll look forward to, because this is just the start, we will be spending a lot of time together, I'm sure, after February. So thank you, and thank you, staff, and thank you, the director, who also spent a lot of time working through many issues. And we have a lot more fun to come. That, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1031. Moving along, we are going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1055. Okay, and we had some folks who, unfortunately, we ran out of time at the last public hearing, and so I'd like to invite up Catherine Daniels from DLCD, Ann Hannis from the Association of Oregon Counties, Sean Cleave from the Farm Bureau. I think those were the three who we did not have time to hear from. So please come on up.
Thank you. I'll start. Ann Hannis with the Association of Oregon Counties. While we're not taking a position on this bill, I do want to say that AOC is very interested in addressing the larger issue of conflicts on EFU zone lands. We're seeing all kinds of issues coming up over the years, ranging from dealing with pumpkin patches to weddings to festivals to soccer matches. And we discussed this issue at our fall conference and at our fall district meetings. And AOC is committed to taking the lead and putting together an inclusive work group, I'll emphasize work group, involving all the major stakeholders to develop solutions for the next legislative session or if it takes longer. But we do want to bring everybody together and really start addressing this and looking at the bigger picture. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sean?
Thanks, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The issue addressed in 1055 is an issue that the Farm Bureau is definitely interested in pursuing from a broader scope. I think the Dash 5s that were introduced just recently are probably a good start to provide a bridge for the Winery Association and its members, but also provide a mechanism to make sure that they're at the table for a broader discussion during the interim. There have been some other amendments that have been proposed to the bill. I think the Farm Bureau could be agreeable to those too. But I just want to put on the record today that this is a big issue. The Farm Bureau has actually gone through what I would describe as a paradigm shift regarding vertical integration of agricultural activities in the EFU. However, we still remain concerned that we provide mechanisms for protecting the commercial activities that occur in the EFU zones from those conflicts that will arise through more non-traditional commercial uses. So it's a pretty complicated issue. I stand ready to sit on any task force or work group that may come up, irregardless of whether this bill moves forward today. Thank you.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Hi, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Daniels. I'm the Farm and Forest Land Specialist for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Event venues, which include weddings, class reunions, and other similar types of activities, are increasingly popular in EFU zones in many parts of the state, not just at wineries, but also at a number of other types of locations, including on farms, at bed and breakfasts, in nurseries, in other types of home occupations, in historic structures, as private parks, and even as freestanding uses. So the context of the issue is really quite a bit broader than wineries. And county planners are wondering how to treat and how to review event venues in all of these different circumstances. And for this reason, we think that an ideal approach to the issue would be to address event venues in the broadest possible context in which they're actually occurring. The only other comment we'd like to make is that we think that event venues should be made subject to a conditional use process to assure their compatibility with adjacent farm uses.
Sure.
A process similar to or the same as ORS 215-296, which is the conditional use review process for non-farm uses. This would give counties the opportunity and ability to sit down and talk with applicants and adjacent farm owners to work out any potential conflicts that farmers may foresee or anticipate, such as with spraying, manure application, traffic, and so on. Several counties already use the conditional use process when they review event venues. If the committee appoints a work group, we hope that it will be broadly representative of the farm community, together with the event industry and counties, and we would be happy to serve in any way that we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? All right. Thank you very much, and I do appreciate your offer to help out on work group, because that is something I think that absolutely needs to happen. I know there's a commitment to do that, to look at these broader issues, and regardless of this narrow, you know, focus that we have in this bill, obviously there are many other issues that are out there that need to be resolved that we seem to come back to session after session after session. So I think taking, I hate to say the word, a big look. Maybe I can say we need a big tent to get under there. A large look. It's not that big. It's just a large look. Thank you, Senator.
How about encompassing view?
And then, yes, a broad encompassing view. Okay. How about a liberal view? No, sorry. Big view. So I appreciate your comments, and I do encourage, we are not setting up an official work group here, but I encourage the departments to work with the counties and obviously the stakeholders to make sure that that happens.
Yes, and we'll be reporting back along with the stakeholders on how the progress is going.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Senator Boquist, I am going to ask you to talk about, I had asked Senator Boquist to bring some parties together and see if we can come up with some compromise. I want to first of all thank Senator Boquist for his hard work in such a short time and for your creative thinking in this, and if you could maybe explain a little bit about the discussions, and then I think we want to bring some folks up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At your request, I started, for better word, pinging various groups to make sure we had everybody's written statements so that we could, you know, get the moving target to not move so much and see if there was some sort of common ground. And then there was an immense amount of discussion between the Department of Agriculture, the LCDC, the winery groups, Thousand Friends, of which I think much appreciation is regardless of what transparent comes out. Having worked on the land use planning issue for now three terms and three special sessions, I know that every time I get involved in a task force, I get burnt, and every time I don't volunteer for a work group, I get burnt. So I suppose volunteering for this work group is a good thing when you have a large agricultural district like mine. And regardless of what comes out, I mean, I look forward to working with the various entities throughout the rest of the fall, because last time this happened, one of the good senators up here didn't do well in my district. So anyway, I will participate this time as a volunteer. What we did is we sat down with various stakeholders, kind of came to a couple of conceptual ideas. One was a timeout idea, which had a lot of support for a timeout area. And a timeout basically would have worked in the philosophy of, okay, we just, whatever we're doing now, let's just kind of stop and let's look at it and come back at the next session with a more comprehensive, thoughtful solution. Getting that written into a piece of legislation in less than 24 hours, I think, kind of came almost to an insurmountable task, despite the best efforts of some other senators here, of LC, of the Department of Agriculture, LCDC, even Thousand Friends, the Oregon Wine Growers Association, and everything else, because there still remembers to be pitfalls. And again, we're trying to put a little teeny temporary solution out there for a rather broad problem that's out there. What we did kind of come to is that when we originally were having discussions around the Dash 1 amendment, we looked at the Dash 1 amendment and tried to get the individuals that were adamantly opposed to the Dash 1 amendment in one form or the other, or adamantly in support of it, down at the same table over a friendly discussion, we'll say. And when I left, there didn't seem to be that much gray hair, and when I came back to my office, which they were locked in, there seemed to be a lot of gray hair, but they had come to some consensus. And with that, I think, Madam Chair, I mean, what we have primarily is two options, or three options: do absolutely nothing, which is probably not an option, do the Dash 1 amendment, which has some pitfalls either direction, and insist that a volunteer work group, which I would be delighted, since it's not a task force, to participate in, since I walked into this minefield, and that option, or try and put a timeout. And the timeout just has a lot of little pitfalls that don't solve a lot of problems, despite being maybe the best idea. So we're at the Dash 1s right now, and if you want to go from there, Madam Chair.
Yes, I would like to call up Jim Just and Gary Conkling, please. And again, thank you, Senator, for your hard work on this. Does everyone have a copy of this statement? I think it's coming. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. You do both have gray hair.
Didn't this morning.
Okay, so you'll see that they actually did put something in writing, so maybe you can walk us through what you've agreed to here.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gary Conkling, representing the Oregon Wine Growers, and confirming what Senator Boquist said. Mr. Just and I sat down. This actually was a continuation of a couple of earlier conversations, including one last night, to try to discuss and understand what was meant by the Dash 1 amendment. And the statement that we put forward today for the legislative record as a joint statement reflects our common understandings of what the Dash 1 amendment says and how it would work. And either Jim or I would be glad to walk through it if you would like.
If you can do that.
Go ahead. Okay. The Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1055 seek to provide clarification to existing state law regarding permitted use wineries in exclusive farm use zones. And again, the statute that you have deals with permitted use wineries. There are wineries in Oregon that are cited under something other than the permitted use statutes. So this is limited to looking at those that fall under those statutory provisions. The intent of the Dash 1 amendments is to limit the items and services other than wines produced in conjunction with the winery that may be sold by a winery, and to cap such sales at not more than 25% of the on-site retail sale of wines produced in conjunction with the winery. Section 1, sub 2, sub B, specifies what incidental items are included under the 25% cap. They include food and beverages served by a limited services restaurant, which is already currently permitted under Oregon law, wine not produced by the winery, and gift items. The retail sale of wine not produced by a winery is currently allowed under Oregon's winery OLCC licenses, but our intention is to bring those sales under the proposed cap. Section 1, subsection 2, subsection C specifies services directly related to the sale and promotion of wine produced in conjunction with the winery must be incidental to the sale and delivery of retail sale of wine on site. This section limits these services to private events that are hosted by the winery or patrons of the winery at which wine produced in conjunction with the winery is featured. Private events must be known and limited attendance controlled by pre-sold tickets or a guest list. The total sales of items and services under Sections 1, Subsection 2, B, and C must not exceed 25% of the total retail sales on-site of wine produced in conjunction with the winery. Wine produced in conjunction with the winery includes wine sold under a winery's own label or labels or under a custom crush agreement. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is the statement that we think provides some additional clarity to the statutory language. And again, at least from the Oregon wine growers' point of view, in working with Senator Winters and others on Senate Bill 1055, our limited aspiration was to provide some clarity for counties in dealing with new applications for permitted use wineries and for any enforcement actions for existing permitted use wineries. That was the scope of what we attempted to address in our efforts on this bill and the scope of the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gary.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we think this is an improvement over an existing situation. It's far from it's far from ideal, and it's a small piece of a much bigger problem. There's a couple of things that we still have concerns with. The whole issue of around events at wineries is troublesome, and it remains troublesome. We would like to see the last sentence of the next to the last paragraph. Private events must have known and limited attendance controlled by pre-sold tickets or a guest list actually inserted into the language of the Dash 1 amendments at Section 1, Sub 2, Sub C to further clarify what private events are and further limit them. We think the 25% is kind of pulled out of the air without a whole lot of basis in fact. But as a first step and an interim step, we're okay with this, with those reservations, and we would like to, certainly like to see a work group convened to take a more comprehensive look at this, and we would support the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments in conjunction with the Dash 5 amendments to really give impetus to that work group to finish its work and come up with a more comprehensive solution by the end of the next session.
Okay, and we didn't, can you just restate your state your name for the record?
Oh, Jim Just, 1,000 Friends of Oregon.
Okay, thank you. So since we just got the Dash 5s, do you want to speak to these? Are these from, I don't know who submitted these.
No, Madam Chair, the 3s, 4s, and 5s are LC's versions of trying to figure out what to do.
Okay.
They're all the same.
So this was all, this Dash 5 is another time. Okay,
them.
Got it. All right.
So it's one of the 3?
No, it's Dash 1s.
Yeah, they're not compatible at this point.
Okay, Senator Przanski.
Yeah, thank you. I need to build a record here, so hopefully y'all can help me do that. Gary, what I've heard you say, I just want to put this on the record. The wineries that are not under ORS 215-452, which are current law, which are defined as either less than 50,000 gallons or at least 50,000 gallons, but no more than 100,000 gallons, are the wineries we're talking about that would be impacted by Senate Bill 1055 with the Dash 1s.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, all of the wineries, which I believe you're referencing, that are under the permitted use provisions of existing law, would be the wineries covered by the Dash 1 amendment.
I don't know if that was clear or not.
I'm not sure what he said.
Yeah.
Well, the discussion.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, let me try again. The current statute specifies that small wineries with annual production of less than 50,000 gallons have a certain acreage amount. Wineries with production levels between 50 and 100,000 have a different acreage amount, but both of those groups qualify with those terms to be permitted use wineries. And what I said was both of those groups are covered by the Dash 1 amendments.
All right. So if you have a winery that's above and beyond 100,000 gallons, they are not considered a permitted use winery, correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, that's correct.
And they would not be impacted by the passage of 1050, or Senate Bill 1055 with the Dash 1s?
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, I believe that's true.
All right. And lastly, there's nothing that would stop one of those type of wineries that is not a permitted use winery to continue whatever process they may be in and receiving a conditional use permit from their local county.
Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, I'm unaware of any restrictions that this applies to wineries that are not permitted use wineries.
All right. You made, if I can follow up.
Follow up.
You made statements in your testimony that it appeared that this would affect those that are permitted use that were beginning the process going forward in time. And so anything that may already be in the process with the counties is not, the bill is not intended to impact their ability to continue whatever permitting process they're going through.
What's the effective date on this?
Madam Chair, Senator Brzozinski, again, these provisions only relate to wineries that qualify for permitted use, permitted use wineries. And there may be wineries seeking currently applications for permitted use winery permits from their respective counties, and counties may use the clarifications that are provided in Dash 1 in evaluating those applications. But if somebody is not a permitted use winery, I don't think these provisions have any application.
I'm going to ask DLCD if they can come up, or do we want to have somebody from the counties that want to address this?
Madam Chair, may I say one thing? Sure. As Mr. Just mentioned, the inclusion of statutory language for referencing private events must have known and limited attendance controlled by pre-sold tickets or a guest list. In our discussions today, we agreed to that subject that we would, assuming the committee's pleasure is to move this bill, seek that amendment in the House side by consensus.
That was going to be my request. Thank you. Gentlemen. All right, wait, are there other questions before we'll have DLCD come up?
You can, Madam Chair, just for the record, in the discussions with the various agencies and in regard to a select number of wineries that are presently either have issues beyond this bill or in the process of working with various county governments, I didn't find anything, as long as you don't pass the Dash 5 or the 6, anything that would prevent their existing applications and process from going forward. And I think that's a key concern here. We're just putting a little Band-Aid on this, and then we're going to come back and address it. And what we want to ensure the intent of the committee is that we don't stop or prevent a county from working with an entity in the state to get the appropriate, what's the word I'm looking for? The appropriate
conditional use permit
or approvals from the county government. And that was kind of, that's where the number 5 came into a little bit of a pitfall.
Well, Senator Boquist and I, when we worked on this yesterday, we suggested that maybe we do the timeout. That was 3. And I understand the 4s and 5s are continuations of the 3, but I have concerns based on how the 3s, 4s, and 5s are written that it would, in fact, stop that process.
Right.
And because of that, that's why I would not support 3, 4s, or 5. But after speaking with one of my two counties, they stated that they felt that the Dash 1s would be appropriate. It would not impact, but I want to make certain we have it on the record. So if there's any concerns after we gavel out of this special session as to what everyone's intent was and what the bill actually does.
We appreciate that. And I do want the department, if you'd like to come up, either the director or staff. Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you for your hard work this morning on this. Director Whitman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Richard Whitman, the director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I've asked Catherine Daniels, our Farm Forest Specialist, to come up with me, and she's going to start by just a quick response on the ways that wineries can be permitted in farm zones, and then I can speak to the applicability questions.
Okay, thank you.
There are 3 different ways that that wineries, effectively wineries, can be established in EFU zones, although they're not all 3 of them called wineries. One of them is the official winery provision, is at 215-283 sub 1 use, an outright permitted use under 242 rather. That's the one we've been talking about today. There's 2 other ways that entities can be approved that are basically wineries, and that would be if you are producing more than 100,000 gallons, you could be reviewed as what we call a sub 2 use, a conditional use that would be a commercial activity in conjunction with farm use. And that is used by the larger facilities who want to be reviewed as a conditional use. There's also a third way that counties are allowing entities effectively as wineries, and that is a processing facility, as a sub one outright permitted use, and that's 215-283 sub. Well, it was U, it just changed to two. I'm sorry, to T. I believe it's sub T. Processing facility in which at least a quarter of the crops that are used in the processing facility are grown on site. And I believe the facility can be no larger than 10,000 square feet. So those are turning into wineries in combination with farm stands, which are being used for tasting rooms. So there's a whole span of different ways to allow effectively wineries right now in the state.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to add anything, Director?
Madam Chair, I think there was a question about the applicability of the amendments to law being considered by the committee to any land use application that was pending before a county. And I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage in that I don't have all the dash amendments in front of me, but it's my understanding there's no special applicability clause in any of the dash amendments. So what that means is that if there is an application pending before a county right now, filed before the effective date of this legislation, it would be subject to the regular, what's known in the land use world as the goalpost rules, and that works both ways. In this case, it would mean if the application was filed before the effective date, it would be reviewed under current law, not the laws it would be amended by this legislation.
Thank you for that clarification. Do you follow up?
Thank you very much.
Yep.
So basically, if I could just give a clarification, the first way you said that was outside of the permitted use that's under the statute that's going to be modified was sub 2, continual use with a commercial within a farm.
Commercial activity in conjunction with farm use
activity.
For the larger types of wineries. Uh-huh. Right, that would be a conditional use.
It's issued by the county.
Okay.
Right.
And that's issued by the county?
That's issued by the county, that's
okay.
Right.
Thank you.
There was the processing, too.
Yeah, I got a processing facility.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the director? Okay. Thank you very much. Senator, did you want to ask a question?
Mr. Bruneau, could you nod affirmative or negative regarding the Dash 1 amendments? That's not a nod, but thank you very much.
Okay, so for the record, we did get a thumbs up from Jim Bruneau. Any other questions, clarifications from the committee members? Senator Boquist.
Well, we're at nods, Madam Chair. I envision, because last time I said I didn't serve on a work group, I got bit by it, if there's available committee staff after the zoo is done in March and going forward, I plan to work with the various stakeholder groups that are out here to try and put together some answers to these larger questions. And without spending additional money, I'd just like a nod that I can use the committee staff as their time is available, incidental to their other duties, to do that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Your head.
Yes. We're just having a chat with our LC, but I think we are about ready to move the Dash 1 amendments. Can you see if Senator Hass is outside? We're just going to recess here for a minute, or take a pause, I should say.
I'll get it.
No, we'll take a pause. We just need to find a member who I know wanted to vote on this bill.
And Madam Chair, just I envision having done this sort of thing before in the past. And I mean, the primary impetus will have to be at the county level and then bringing everybody in together. So the Associated Oregon Counties would have to be the center point, and then would invite but not require folks from Department of Ag and LCDC.
I'm seeing a nod from the Association of Oregon Counties.
That whole thing makes me really nervous. I would hope that we would have, if we're taking comments on that, people from outside the Willamette Valley making comments on that.
This district. No, Senator
Hass? I would welcome your participation.
Okay. Don't do that to me.
Okay.
I'm only doing this because I got burnt last time this happened.
No, I can get some other participants.
Well, you can go ahead and make them. I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I'd move the Dash 1 amendments to...
Okay, Senator Atkinson moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1055, and there is a discussion, because I would first like to thank again Senator Boquist for his work on this and the parties. I will reemphasize that this, the adoption of these amendments, this is a start. This is working on one small part of the issue, looking at other uses on EFU land. Certainly here, and if the Farm Bureau is still here, but certainly hearing the concerns, Farm Bureau and Thousand Friends, we want to make sure that there is agreement that folks who have worked on this issue are going to be committed to working together, staying at the table to make sure that we can address some of these broader issues long term. And I appreciate the Association of Oregon Counties and the other agencies that have agreed to work on this together, and I'm seeing nods going back and forth. So we can go ahead and we have a motion. We'll try to get Senator Hass here for voting on the bill. So any objections to adoption of the dash ones? Seeing none. Dash ones are adopted.
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill as amended for the pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 1055 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended with the dash ones. Is there any discussion? Okay. We'll hold off here for a minute, and if we can't find Senator Hass, we'll just keep going.
Why don't we can take the vote and we can always let
go back and vote.
Okay.
So we can get on.
We'll go ahead. Any objections to that? Motion. Okay. With that, the motion carries, and I would like Senator Boquist, if you would be so.
Oh, I'm just delighted, Madam Chair.
Kind as to carry this bill, and that's what happens with all good deeds don't go unrewarded.
Punished, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Punished.
Okay. Thank you, and with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1059. And I will note for the record that Senator Hass is excused unless he wants to come back and vote on this. Okay. With that, I'm going to open up our last work session of the day, which is on Senate Bill 1059. We have an amendment that is in front of all the committee members. It's a dash six amendment. Beth, if you can provide an explanation, and then we'll call up the co-chairs of the task force to explain further.
Madam Chair, committee members, the dash six amendment is in front of you. There's also a fiscal statement in front of you on the dash six. I think it would be best if the vice chairs of the task force explain the dash six amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Our pleasure. Mr. Van Lanningham will...
Well, we did have a lot of land use issues, as you know, so I'm sure you were...
John Van Lanningham, I'm the Chair of the Land Conservation and Development Commission.
Gail Ackerman, I'm the Chair of the Transportation Commission.
So, Madam Chair, we have been told that the Dash 6 amendments address the concerns, or at least to an acceptable level, of people who testified in the hearing on Tuesday about this. Here's what the dash... I'm not going to walk through the bill unless somebody wants me to. I'm going to try to just say what the dash twos, dash sixes,
sixes
change. First, the dash sixes provide that when DLCD or ODOT or LCDC or OTC confers with folks, it has to include in that group of conferees local governments. Second, it makes consistent that where we are conferring with those folks, we are doing so after consultation and in cooperation. So both verbs consistently in all the different places where we are required to do that. Those are both things that were raised on Tuesday. Third, there were concerns raised about references in the bill to 1990 levels and how we anticipate or how that factors in with quick growing communities. So we are adding to the Section 5 where LCDC is required to set targets for the MPOs. We're adding this sentence. The rules must also take into consideration methods of equitably allocating reductions among the metro areas given differences in population growth rates. The purpose of that sentence is to make sure that LCDC, as it sets the targets, considers that factor. There's also a change in page 3 of the bill, section 5, sub 2, sub E, where the verb should is changed to need to, which was requested by the MPOs as part of making it clear that they are not, that we're going to consider those factors as we try to set the targets. No, the other change is in Section 7, which is the section that describes what the local governments that make up the MPOs must do. And the original version said that the MPO, the local governments and the MPOs shall consider whether any immediate action can be taken, and we've agreed to change the word consider to, I'm sorry, I'm doing it backwards. It was determined in the original version, change it to consider.
Okay, and just to clarification, can you just restate the line, please, so everybody can follow along?
So in that case, I'm referring to the dash, well, it's in the dash sixes. It's on the third page.
It's on the sixth page. Which part do you, pardon me, Madam Chair?
On the dash sixes.
On the dash sixes, are you referring to the amendments in Section 7?
Yes.
Yeah.
From determined to consider, it's
yes.
on page
right.
6 at line 14 and line 16. It's the very last page on the version I have.
Okay.
You guys have the same numbered page.
We have different
You have a four-page version.
Yeah.
It's the third page, line 14.
Yeah.
Section
okay,
7, sub 2, sub A. It used to say the MPOs shall determine whether any immediate action. It now says shall consider.
And the same change is made on line 16 right below that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any other comments before we open up for questions? We've lost a few people here.
None from us. I just want to thank, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank the task force members and the League of Oregon Cities and others that worked hard to reach agreement Tuesday afternoon, and thank my co-chair who was a part of that process.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank both of you for your leadership, and I have served on many task forces, and certainly this is one of the let's say, more efficient and targeted processes that I have seen, because there was a lot to cover in a very short time, and I appreciate the hard work of both you and all the members. I think we are going to hear from a couple of other members that we'd like to ask their input on the dash sixes. But
thank you.
So thank you very much. Commissioner Clem, did you want to come up? And is the League of Oregon Cities here? Mr. Honeyman?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dan Clem, City Councilor for the City of Salem, also Chair of SCATS. I, too, would characterize that we have acceptance of the Dash 6 Amendment and very much appreciate the opportunity to work with other members of the task force in crafting the Dash 6. It's not subtle, but it is. We changed a couple of verbs, and the verbs were important in terms of how we proceed from here on out. Consider instead of determine, need instead of should. Those are words, regardless of how you argue how verbs are structured, those are important to us, so that when we get to the point of really taking a look at being serious about reducing emissions and agreeing upon targets, the words cooperation, need, and consider are going to be important, because phase one is really about an education process and an estimation process of what those targets should be. And so we think that the Dash 6 really wraps its arms well around the cooperation in the task force, in the work together group that we had in the task force, and also represents, I think, the will of the public to take a look at greenhouse gas emissions. There are still concerns, but I've been assured by ODOT that we'll be looking at those in the phase two process as we really start to take a look at these estimations. So really not looking for any further wording changes at this point, but we're still concerned that as areas have population growth has occurred, that the VMT as an absolute total amount of emissions is looked at on a per capita basis, and I've been assured that that will be one approach similar to California's that we'll be looking at. Also, the trying to get the total amount of emissions below the 1990 level, without even knowing those numbers, that seems to presume that we can or that we should. I'm not sure that many of us in the cities and in local governments have really understood why that 1990 figure is important and really what that really means. I don't know how many miles I drove in 1990. you know, is 20 years ago today. I haven't got my hands, you know, my arms wrapped around what does that mean to get below the 1990 levels. Carbon monoxide levels here in the Willamette Valley are at the same level that they were in 1949. But greenhouse gas levels somehow have increased. So I look forward to the phase one process and the willingness of ODOT and the other state agencies to help us understand the total vehicle miles traveled, inventory, and why we need to get to below the 1990 level. The wording changes in the Dash 6 help me feel comfortable with that. So we would recommend that you adopt the Dash 6 and move the bill forward. Okay. With that, I remain available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your hard work and your input. I know you've spent a lot of time and effort, and certainly appreciate that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Craig Honeyman, excuse me, League of Oregon Cities. I, too, wish to testify today that the Dash 6 amendments before you are a considerable improvement, especially over the initial, the first draft of Senate Bill 1059. We had a couple of thoughts that Senator Boquist was helping us with, and I wish to thank the senator for his assistance, that we thought would help limit the fiscal exposure to cities that we had testified about previously, especially small cities. We are satisfied that with the language changes describing a cooperative process, including specifically local governments in the bill among the stakeholders that will be consulted with and cooperated with going forward, that the fast growth cities that Mr. Clem was just referring to are beginning to be addressed in this legislation. That Section 8, which acknowledges the need for funding and even suggests that we need to ascertain where those funds are going to be coming from before we go or as we go forward, is also helpful. I acknowledge that the heavy lifting, if you will, initially contemplated in this bill will be undertaken by the appropriate state agencies and not so much local government. But going forward, I want to reiterate the message I left with you on Tuesday. That is, we are remain very concerned about unfunded mandates. We may remain very concerned about the need to ensure that new money is used to deal with the funding requirements that this will bring, that this program will bring about as it continues to unfold. And also the ambiguities about government relationships in the area of land use and transportation planning. So with that, we too will support the Dash 6 amendments and hope as you go forward that you'll be on the lookout for ways to not impair cities that are already strapped to provide basic services, especially small cities in these MPOs, cities like Adair Village, slightly over 900 population, Coburg, slightly over 1,000 populations, Turner, 1,700. Oh, you heard from the gentleman on Tuesday from Turner who described a situation where he just recently obtained some planning personnel, if you will. So with that information, I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Thank you, gentlemen. And before you go, I wanted to see if there's any questions. Nope. Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else that would like to comment on the Dash 6 amendments? Okay. Seeing none. We're in a work session, so I will accept a motion.
Dash 6. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 6 into, I believe it is, Senate Bill 1059.
Senator Przanski moves adoption of the Dash 6 amendments into Senate Bill 1059. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Senator Atkinson. Okay, so noted for the record. The motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1059 as amended by the Dash 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 1059 as amended with the Dash 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I'll be a no vote at this time until I've had an opportunity to discuss the fiscal impact statement with the counties and cities that
that I represent that expressed opposition yesterday. They were maybe quite surprised by these numbers. And I do have a technical question, mm-hmm. since there's such a significant fiscal on this. Well, what happens next before we, so I know before I vote?
Yeah, it will, the Senate president will review it and decide. We're going to recommend a do-pass recommendation going to the floor, but the Senate president is going to review it and then decide whether it will actually go to the floor or go to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because if I read this right, it's a $2.1, $2.3 million fiscal. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Well, there is some discussion, I think, that needs to happen with the agencies, and I'm seeing some nodding there. I think that's there hasn't been time yet for discussion on the Dash 6s, but I will be putting in a letter that to the Senate President that they review this.
It's substantial, Madam Chair.
Are they going to adjust their fiscals after we voted? Maybe we should modify the motion to go to the President's office to consider, you know.
For all two Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did not realize that that's what the significance of the other numbers, based on other numbers, maybe it was in a different bill that we had, but these are significant enough that it appeared that it should go there.
So do you want to amend your motion?
I do.
Okay.
I'd like to amend the motion to send Senate Bill 1059, as amended by the Dash 6, to the President's office for review as to whether it should be referred to Ways and Means or directly to the floor with the DPAS recommendation.
Okay. Senator Prezlansky made a motion to amend his motion to send Senate Bill 1059 as amended with the Dash 6 to the Senate President's office for with a DPAS recommendation, but with consideration about whether to refer this to Ways and Means. And I think we will be reporting back to the committee members about that. Okay?
Question.
Yeah.
If the agencies are going to adjust the numbers for a new fiscal, then I don't believe we should move this bill forward at this time. We are supposed to vote on bills with the proper fiscals before us, not with fiscals in play.
So, should we recess for a minute? We'll get the Senate President's office in. So we are going to recess because we're going to ask the Senate President's office or the Senate clerk to come down. So with that, we are recessed. Okay. So we are back in work session on Senate Bill 1059.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Senator Prasansky.
I'm going to withdraw my motion that's on the table for Senate Bill 1059 being as it currently reads would be to send it with a due pass recommendation to the President's office for consideration as with it being amended as the dash six is. I'm going to just withdraw that completely. And if Chair is ready for a new motion.
Ready for a new motion.
I move that we send Senate Bill 1059 as amended with by the dash six to the President's office for review and subsequent referral to Ways and Means without any position on approval or not based on the new fiscal that we just received prior to our hearing today.
Okay. I'm wondering if I should send it with a due pass recommendation to...
It should make a difference for them to get down there. They're going to have to look at it. This is big bucks. And I think that they're going to have to look at this in conjunction with everything else that they have on the plate in Ways and Means.
Yeah. So is he here?
No.
Okay. We're going to recess again for just a quick minute.
You told me 4 minutes.
We're back in action, back at the work session. We have a motion on the table or that's been proposed on the okay. Do you want to repeat that?
Sure. Madam Chair, the motion was and still is to send Senate Bill 1059 as amended by the dash six to the President's office for subsequent referral to Ways and Means with no recommendation.
Okay, whatever Senator Prasansky said, that's the motion. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair. I will be opposing the bill with the fiscal secondary to my overall objection. I think this is bad policy.
Okay, so noted for the record.
I'm a no vote, Madam Chair, until I consult with counties. And
okay.
I don't think I'm going to get anyone to agree to this one.
Okay, so noted. Okay, with that, the motion carries. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 1059. And before everybody leaves, we have one more request. We have a request to suspend the rules to allow Senator Hass to vote on Senate Bill 1055, so I will take a motion.
So moved.
Do I need to reopen a work session for that? Or?
Yeah,
okay. Open up a work session to allow Senator Hass to vote on Senate Bill 1055. There's a motion to suspend the rules. Any objections? Seeing none. Senator Hass, would you like to vote?
Aye.
Okay, and also on the amendment, actually.
Aye.
Okay, so with that, I think it was unanimous, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yes.
And the motion carries.
Madam Chair, before you gavel down.
Yes. And before everybody leaves, I also want to thank everybody for your hard work. That's the end of our Senate bills. We'll be hearing House bills, and of course, thank our staff who has helped us shepherd through many challenging and interesting bills this short session.
Madam Chair, for the record, on my motion on invoking the one-hour rule on Senate Bill 1032, I need to say the two words, minority report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we are adjourned. We'll see you next Tuesday. Thank you.
Western related? Pause on that one?
That was beautiful.
No.